Hi, I'm Pinakin Munshi, and we are now going to cover the topics of ethics, corporate social responsibility, sustainability, and other consideration in global purchasing. The learning objective for this chapter is understand the role of ethics in global purchasing, understand the role and sense of social responsibility in global sourcing, understand the importance of sustainability in global sourcing, gain an understanding of ethics and compliance issues from suppliers and buyers' perspective, understand the initiatives taken by buyers for ensuring responsible supplier behavior. The learning objectives are gain an understanding of role of global sourcing manager in ethical procurement, understand the checklist for practical implementation of ethics in global procurement, understand the factors involved in evaluating the performance of suppliers on procurement ethics. The structure and contents are as follows: introduction and understanding of the role of ethics in global sourcing, role of social responsibility in purchasing, sustainability in global sourcing, examples of code of conduct of a large MNC engaged in fast-moving consumer goods, FMCG that is, ethics issues from suppliers and buyers' perspective in global sourcing, examples of initiatives taken by buyers for ensuring responsible supplier behavior in the global sourcing arena. Also, role of global sourcing managers in ethical procurement, checklist and questionnaire for practical implementation of global sourcing process and ensuring ethical procurement, evaluating the procurement ethics and compliance level, introduction to supply chain risk management, and supply chain resiliency. So what are the key components of the code of conduct? Clear definition of working hours. So any organization, the supplier organization, has to have clear definition of working hours. The working hours can be defined as per day or per week. Defining working days per week, as we said, many organizations in Europe, etc., even have some minimum requirement, which tells you that you can ask people to work for a minimum of 40 hours or so, and then they can also work for longer hours, but then with certain riders. Guaranteed minimum wage as per the regulation applicable in the supplier country. So a certain minimum wage has to be guaranteed to the people. That means there should be no exploitation where you engage people or you employ people and pay them less than the minimum wages. Overtime compensation as per the regulatory requirement. So, you know, when you are asking people to work beyond the minimum hours, then they are also paid the overtime. Also, overtime should not be forced. It is voluntary. That means you cannot force somebody to work overtime. Health and safety education to all the staff, and physical examination of the personnel involved. And physical examination is especially important in industries where there is a risk of pollution or there are risks of any health hazards, because it's necessary to monitor the health of your employees to see whether there is any occupational injury or occupational health problems which are affecting them. Restrictions on use of child labor, this is actually widely across the world implied restriction. Child labor is not allowed in most countries, or you may say almost all the countries. Authorized employments, so that means you don't employ people in an illegal or unauthorized way. Many places contract labors are also considered as unauthorized. People have to be authorized. They should have a proper appointment letter for when they are employed. Provision of adequate accident and pension insurance. That means the employees are adequately covered for any accident or even for a pension plan, for insurance, even medical insurance. We know that even in India, most of the companies have group insurance for their employees. So this is one of the features which is mandatory. So factors increasing the labor related risk. Places where workers have fewer protection. So you will find many places you have unorganized workplaces where the workers have lesser protection, and protection in terms of any insurance or the medical insurance, etc., but also in terms of the PPE, etc. That means if you're working in a environment where there is a chance of injury or some kind of a health hazard, they are not provided with adequate protection. Places where there are high level of poverty, and you will find that where the poverty is very high, exploitation is very, very common. That means people will employ the local people, laborers, paying them less than the minimum wage without any PPE. Higher level of exploitation is visible in such places. Places where there is a widespread use of migrant workers. So migrant workers, many a times they are not recognized. If they happen to be illegal migrants, then they will also not complain, because they have no loci standi as far as the legislation or the law enforcement is concerned. So they are at a higher chance of being exploited. Some specific high risk industries, typically industries involving raw material. So when you're talking of coal or the ore industry, the various kinds of ore, or when you say raw material, even the unorganized sectors like leather industry, where the hides and skins are processed, or these are where you have more chances or higher risk of labor being ill-treated or exploited. Labor intensive stages of supply chain where the end product is cheap, things like matchbox, firecrackers, again they are not very well regulated, not very organized. Even the labor which are sometimes employed by the transporters for loading and unloading of goods, etc. So social responsibility in purchasing, and one of the responsibilities is maintaining adequate diversity. And how do you do that? Allocation of share of business among the large enterprises and also micro, small, medium enterprises, what we call as the MSME. So there has to be a proper distribution. You can actually source from the larger corporates or the large enterprises, but opportunities have to be also given to the MSMEs to basically encourage them. Encouragement to startups and minority owned enterprises. Engagement of women entrepreneurs. So many a times the women, sometimes destitute women or widows or so, they are actually engaged in some gainful enterprise. I remember one of the company that we were working in, we used to require a special type of hand gloves because we were working with hot metal. And these gloves, we were sourcing it from one of the women organization who used to actually cut and stitch the gloves out of very thick canvas kind of a material. So this kind of opportunities need to be provided to women organization to make them more self-sufficient. And this is also a part of the CSR activity, the corporate social responsibility. Protection and respect towards human rights. So you need to pick on organizations which protect or which respect the human rights. There is no exploitation of the labor or the people working for them. Safety of business operations and the product, inclination towards philanthropy. So the business is not only about making profits, but also giving back to the society, a part of your earnings by way of philanthropy. So most organizations, either part of CSR or even otherwise, they try to develop the communities around the plant where they are located in terms of providing education, training, providing employment to the people there, this sort of a thing. Relevance of environmentally sustainable purchasing policy. Fear of liability, litigation and fines, reputational damage and subsequent negative publicity of the buyer company. So, why do you have to have a sustainable purchasing policy? If you get involved in any kind of a controversy or you yourself are found to be violating some of the policies, you could generate a lot of negative publicity. I remember that one of the multinationals that I worked with spent a very high amount of money on pollution control because the multinational was a Canadian company, and as per the Canadian regulations, they had to ensure certain safety norms and certain pollution control norms. So all those norms were not applicable in India. They did it because they did not want to generate any negative publicity, and they generally believe in whatever are the norms available in Canada, the same should be applicable to all the units across the world, unless the local norms are more stringent. So only then the local norms will have a precedence over the Canadian norms. Civil and criminal penalties against pollutants, action by the Pollution Control Board and state agency. So if you are using material or if you are actually a pollutant, then you could be subjected to civil and criminal penalties. We have seen the repercussions or the implications, as in case of your Union Carbide, where the toxic gas which was released and the kind of implications it had, the company globally had to close down as a result of this one particular accident. So even in smaller cases, if you're found to be violating the pollution control norms, there can be very stringent action, including closure of the unit. Federal and state environmental regulations, non-compliance. So, you have for the environmental and the pollution control norms, there are some regulations which are federal, which are, governed by the central governments, and some which are governed by the state governments. Potential liabilities and cost for disposal of hazardous material and penal action. So even if you are found, handling material in improper way, there could be a huge cost and huge liabilities in cost of disposal of this material, and of course the penal action, penalties, etc., which may be imposed. Suppliers' advances in developing environmental friendly goods and providing environmental friendly packages. So it's important, from procurement point of view, that the suppliers are constantly evolving and they are providing packaging material or even the product that they are providing is environmentally friendly. One of the USP of the company that I work with, we are making chemicals and we say that our chemistries are safe. So we say that it's safe, it's enhanced, and it adds value. When we say safe, we say we don't use any unsafe chemistries. We don't use toxic materials. So this is the kind of inputs that you also need to look at from your suppliers, that they are using safe chemistries, non-polluting chemistries, non-toxic chemistries. Environmental partnership with the suppliers, so you can also get into a kind of a partnership where you can help them develop the chemistries by which they supply the raw material or the products to you, where they don't indulge in toxic materials or restricted substance, as we call it. The buying firm's environmental policy. So many times what you buy is also dictated by the environmental policy of the buying firm, that is you. So maybe in the country where the product is being made, the environmental policy may allow certain liberties, but as a buying company or a buying firm, your environmental policy overrides other considerations. So we'll look at the example of code of conduct. So legal requirement, all suppliers must follow the national laws in the countries they operate. Fairly simple. Additionally, the suppliers also need to comply with some of the guidelines made applicable by the buyer. So in addition to the local laws, like as I mentioned, you know, that the buyer country, if they have certain laws, then they must also comply with these. And those, the you know, laws would be dictated by, or the guidelines which are provided or made applicable by the buyer organization. Child labor, company does not accept child labor. And as I said, that I think globally, this is a taboo. No company wants to deal with any supplier which you know, legitimately or illegally employs child labor. Their policy is based on the United States Convention on the Rights of the Child. So until a person achieves a certain age, he cannot be employed in the organization. Safety. Company requires from their suppliers that the worker safety should be prioritized and no hazardous equipment or unsafe buildings are accepted. And this actually comes from the recent accident which happened in Bangladesh, where a apparel factory collapsed and a large number of workers were actually crushed to death in this accident. And it was found that the people were working, the companies which were actually making the apparels or the you know, the dresses, etc., they were supplying to very reputed brands. But the people working there, we were working in subhuman conditions. The environment was not very safe. The building was not very safe, which actually resulted in the accident, in, resulting in the loss of lives. So first aid equipment must be made available. Actually, this is a very, very mild way of putting it. So people, I mean, companies or suppliers have to ensure the safety and health of their employees. Workers' rights, no bonded workers, prisoners or illegal workers. So what we talked about, the illegal migrants, etc., so they should not be allowed in the production. Not only production, but in any part of the supplier organization. No punishment is allowed. So no corporal punishments, no physical abuse, etc., should be allowed. No discrimination regarding race, gender or religion is allowed. Fairly easy to understand. Every employee shall get an employment contract. So as I mentioned a little earlier, every employee should have a contract. So it's not that, you know, you have unorganized labor where people just walk in and then they are paid a pittance. So when they have a contract, it is clearly spelled out, you know, about their working conditions, working hours, the wages, etc. Minimum wages and maximum working hours are clearly specified. Factory conditions, maintain the factory conditions in a most conducive manner, because there are certain industries like chemical industries, like metal industry, where, you know, you're working with hot metal, etc. The conditions can be inhuman. The temperatures can be very high, or in chemical units, there can be chemical fumes. And there, adequate protection has to be provided, the right environment has to be provided, ventilation, the place has to be well ventilated. Housing conditions, better living conditions for the employees. So wherever the industries are also providing the accommodation, where, you know, the industries are located in remote areas, so the proper living conditions have to be provided. Environment. Compliance to environmental regulations. That means all the environmental regulations are being complied with. Maintenance of air, water and soil pollution control mechanism. So there are mechanisms in place to ensure that all the discharges, all the effluents are well within the permissible limits, and there is a constant monitoring and control of these mechanisms. Monitoring and enforcement. Company expects all its suppliers to respect the above code of conduct and to actively do their utmost to achieve company lead standards. So basically what you're saying is that all the things which are specified in the code of conduct have to be complied with. So what are the initiatives taken by buyers for ensuring responsible supplier behavior. Increased level of inspection efforts. So you need to actually go and inspect. And this is a very important thing, because I have personally gone, for supplier audits, etc. And you find that many a times you see that the employees are wearing brand new dress. Maybe they were working in civil dress, but just because there was a audit, supplier audit by the buyer, the people have got the new PPE, that is the personal protective equipment, and they have got some uniforms, etc. And you can make out sometimes that the PPE are not used. A very interesting case in one of the units, which was handling a particular chemical which is a little hazardous. And when we actually went for the audit, I asked one of the workers as to why he is not using the personal protective equipment. And he said, "No, sir, I'm using it." And I asked him to use the equipment. I said, "Can you please wear this equipment and show it to me?" And he started fumbling. It clearly means that he has never been using this personal protective equipment. So these are the signs, which tell you that a supplier has not been actually complying with the norms. So tighter regulatory controls, enhancing supplier education. So you also need to, educate them. They also need to be made aware that if they don't comply, then you cannot deal with them. Improvement in the supplier production efficiency, penalty incentive mechanism embedded in the contract. So even the contract that you enter in, you have a penalty and a incentive clause, so that if there is any untoward incident, etc., or if they are not complying, you are conducting the audits, both announced audit and unannounced. If you find there are violations, then there will be certain penalties. And if you find that there is a compliance, there also can be built in an incentive. So that it's a carrot and stick approach, where you actually motivate people to comply with the regulations. The sourcing manager should ensure that the system is developed to facilitate collection and provision to all parties with the information they need to plan more effectively. So the sourcing manager's responsibility is to actually develop the system to communicate all the related information to the stakeholders, including the supplier. Even the vendor audits or the supplier audit which are carried out, the report should be shared. There has to be a clear plan for improvement. So whatever lacunas are found, a time-bound plan has to be made, to correct the situation. The sourcing manager should also work towards building efficient communication and formalized, streamlined buying and production processes. Fairly simple. I will not actually elaborate on this topic. The organization needs to empower the procurement professionals to select and reward the good practice and leadership of the supplier. So wherever the buyers or the procurement professionals see some good practices, they should be, encouraged to, reward such suppliers, identify them, and this kind of success stories can also be shared with some of the other suppliers. Establish a robust risk management mechanism to identify and prevent the buyer organization from the supplier's unethical practices. So you need to have a risk management mechanism where you are actively reviewing what are the risks you have with each of your supplier, so that you are not a victim of the unethical practices of the supplier and there are no surprises. The organization needs to encourage buyers and suppliers to collaborate with organizations who have expertise in addressing systematic problems within the supply chain and ensure that the buyer organization is well protected from such issue. So the buyer and the supplier, they need to collaborate, they need to make sure, maybe you can involve external agencies who will also help you in ensuring compliance and thus protect you from any liability or any surprises. establish mechanism to identify and address unacceptable practices like fraud, bribery, and modern slavery. So this kind of things could be happening in the country, or even we know that within India, this kind of things do go on. Even in the supplier organization, it should not so happen that by way of gifts or, you know, people are giving expensive gifts to basically gain certain favors, you know, from the buyer. So one has to be very, very alert to this kind of practices to ensure that you are carrying out business in a very transparent way. This would also be covered by the code of conduct within the organization, which covers your employees. Thank you.